Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 119. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Search Security, and I am here, as usual, with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter, welcome.
Hi, Rob.
Peter, we are in Chernobyl. It is August 3rd. We are going to discuss something that is going to be a topic in some sessions next week at Black Hat. But it's been in the news pretty consistently. We've done previous podcasts on it. The topic of vulnerability disclosure, and more specifically, what constitutes responsible vulnerability disclosure, not just on the part of the researcher, the bug hunter, but also the vendors and the companies that are putting up the bug bounties. And the reason we were talking about this today is, Peter, you just did a story on a new initiative, which we're going to discuss in detail in a moment. But also because a number of people have been telling us, I guess since RSA, but even before this year, sort of concerns about how vulnerability research is being done, how bug bounties are being done. And Casey Ellis, founder, CTO of BugCrowd, told me back at RSA, and we posted the interview not that long ago, he had told me during a conversation that he felt like the era of good faith security research was possibly coming to an end. It was in jeopardy. He was concerned about it. And lo and behold, he referenced some work that he was doing with other organizations and other people, which would eventually turn into what we're talking about today, Disclose.io. But he said he was concerned that, you know, this all the work that's being done around security and vulnerability research was sort of based on good faith and understanding between all the parties involved. And he was very concerned. He saw a lot of signs that this was starting to come apart. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but the Disclose.io project, this is sort of an answer to those concerns, to the sort of the worries about, you know, giving security researchers the ability to do these bug bounty programs without, you know, legal hassles, but also making sure that there's some type of, I guess, framework involved. So, Peter, You wrote about the story for us today for Search Security. Walk us through.
So Disclose.io is a project that's being run by a doctoral student at University of California at Berkeley, Amit Elazari, and she's been working on this sort of project. This is her area. She's getting
yes.
Working on her an advanced degree in law, and she's already considered an expert in bug bounty law, and
which is a narrow field, by the way.
Yeah,
good for her.
But it's it's good to specialize.
Yeah,
it's definitely
very
good to specialize.
Yeah.
But the approach is to lay out, you know, to make it clear when you're setting up your bug bounty that you're not looking to, or that you're not going to take legal action, you know, call the cops on people for breaking into your systems because you've got a bug bounty program, and that's the whole point of it. And there's, I think there's a lot of detail to dig down into, but the bottom line is, if you're going to be participating in a bug bounty program, you want to feel confident that you're not going to be arrested for breaking the computer fraud and the CFAA.
Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
Exactly. Or the Millennium
Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Which both of those people have been prosecuted under, and you know, some of them may have been prosecuted or had to face those charges, even though they were doing something that they thought was legitimate. So there's a lot of work that's gone into this already. Amit has her own website as well as the disclose.io website, where it talks about the framework and solicits help from people in the industry. Mm-hmm. And there's another site where there's a list of all of the organizations that are running bug bounty programs that are conforming to this framework. And when we got the original press release on this one, there were 18 companies listed. As of this morning, the last time I checked, there were 21. Mozilla's on there. Dropbox is on there. BugCrowd is on there. BugCrowd, and there's a tech-oriented law firm called CipherLaw, a tech-oriented law firm called CipherLaw, that have done work in this area. There was a framework published last year by the Justice Department on how to do these programs without putting your participants in violation of the CFAA, and giving them a way to avoid having to worry about that. So this is an important part of it. It's not the only part, though.
No, it's not. And I should note that the project expands on the work being done by BugCrowd and CipherLaw's open source vulnerability disclosure framework.
Yeah, and this isn't BugCrowd is not sponsoring this. BugCrowd is just part of it. Amit is, and Casey and BugCrowd, according to my contact, who tells me that they're just working to broadcast this this message that there's a risk landscape involved, and without clear safe harbor language in the vulnerability disclosure boilerplate, you're going to have to be careful about it.
So. Yeah, and you're potentially, for the people that have been through this and are experienced, that might scare off some more of those researchers that are aware of the legal risks, that have maybe been threatened with lawsuits or legal action, or maybe even hit with such action. So this is sort of an area that we don't often think about. When you think about responsible disclosure, Peter, you and I have expended a lot of energy over the years talking about how to do disclosure properly. And a lot of times it's focused on, the proper deadline, the proper amount of time, the proper notification, the proper way to go public with those vulnerabilities. Don't tease them. Don't release the information too soon. Release it in a responsible way. Don't get too markety with it. Don't get silly with the branded vulnerabilities. And then also on the other side, for the vendors, work with the researchers, reply to them, let them know that they've got something, and don't ignore it. A lot of that sort of etiquette. This is something that I think a lot of people kind of overlook. Or at least I feel like I haven't seen as much attention being paid to sort of the legal aspect of it. And it's pretty important. Because you can get in a lot of trouble for this. And this aspect of the disclosure process was highlighted by another individual in the InfoSec community. And it's worth pointing this out because Google Project Zero, I mean, we know Project Zero has been, I mean, this is what they do. They hunt bugs. So Natalie Slavanovich penned a blog post talking about, hey, here's some things you didn't know about the vulnerability disclosure process, vulnerability reporting. And it's crazy. Like it's, I don't think we appreciate how much sort of language is in some of these agreements for these bug bounties, whether they're just put up by the organization on their own website or whether they're on HackerOne or BugCrowd. And sort of the legal liability that you can put yourself in it's intimidating. It's scary.
And from reading that blog post, it's not even clear some of the points that Natalie raises are that it's not even clear what your exposure is, because there are cases where the vendor that you're trying to report a bug to will mandate certain rules, like you have to give us 180 days before you publicly reveal the bug.
Right.
Or else what? Or you must not, you know, if we ask you not to reveal the bug at all.
Yeah.
I mean, there's
yeah,
there's,
well, what's the penalty? I mean, she got into that in the blog post. She says, you know, it's not, there's specific terms of Samsung's agreement on their website, but it's not clear. She's totally vague about what would happen if you break those terms. Are they going to take legal action or what?
Well, I mean, they could just withhold the bounty, which if you're working for Google Project Zero, I want to say that they don't accept bounties.
Yeah, I think that was a policy. I don't know if that's still the case. But regardless, they don't care. I mean, that's their job.
Exactly.
They're already being paid for this. But if you're an independent researcher and you're reading through this, and she kind of touched on this, it's look, you know, you're on this page. Some of it's in, you know, a foreign language. It's not really clear what you're supposed to be doing or agreeing to. You can't move forward with the reporting process until you agree to some of these things or all of these things. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to sign that away.
And on top of that, you mentioned giving, you know, a lot of terms and agreements that you have, or terms and conditions you have to agree to. It seemed like there were an awful lot of terms and conditions that she had to agree to before she could even get through the forms. The same goes with the information that you have to provide. Why would a bug hunter need to provide their zip code or their?
Makes no sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, though, I do understand why they might be asked to provide a social security number, because if they're getting paid. But if they're providing the bug with it and not asking to get paid, then there's no reason for some of the information that apparently is being requested. We should point out also that that Samsung revised and improved their processes after this instance where Natalie was encountering difficulties. Which she reported as well that they did fix that.
Yeah.
So that's a good, you know, that's important to be responsive.
And I should point out that blog post, which is a really good read. That blog post, she takes an opportunity to it's mostly on Samsung, but she takes an opportunity to say, hey, this isn't an uncommon problem. In fact, you know, I'll read the quote here. Quote, the Android security reporting template requires creating a Gmail account, which can require clicking through many screens and verification via SMS in some circumstances. SMS verification not doing well right now, considering the Reddit breach. You know, and she takes a moment to say, hey, you know, we're not perfect at this either. But you, in addition to making it a difficult process, the legal aspect of it, you wonder how many bug reports are not being filed because of it.
Sure.
And you know, I'm more concerned about that. Less concerned about like who may be violating terms and conditions and who may be losing a bounty. Although you know, if you are doing the work, you should be paid for it. If that's the agreement. And Matthew Green, cryptography expert that we frequently cite in Search Security, talked about this on Twitter. He followed up. He tweeted, quote, this is an underappreciated aspect of vulnerability rewards programs. They often require vulnerability reporters to agree to arbitrary legal agreements while also removing alternative channels for vulnerability reporting. End quote. So basically boxing you in, and you don't really know what you're agreeing to. I mean, would you do that? You've written books.
I have written books.
So, I don't know. I mean, anytime you sign up for something as a consumer, aren't we, like the longer stuff is, the more you're kind of, what am I agreeing to? What are these terms and conditions? You start seeing legalese, and you you're apprehensive. So why would that be any different for vulnerability researchers, especially those that know that that is a distinct possibility, getting some type of threat of a lawsuit or threat of jail time, for goodness sake.
For trying to do a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I think this is a real sort of underserved area, and I don't know how you feel, but I hadn't really considered it as being a major need, but now that, you know, you start reading about this, it does feel like it.
Well, yeah, and you had mentioned at the beginning, talking about the end of the sort of a golden age of cooperation.
Yeah.
And it reminded me from this past RSA, the RSA conference in April, when Katie Mussouris was talking about bug bounties. And she laid out a lot of different attributes of the bug bounty program process, that places where it can be improved greatly and places where it where it's really vulnerable. And some of the things that she some of the points that she raised are sort of point to this whole concept of bug bounty. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, bug bounties were like, wow, these are great.
Yeah.
And now we're understanding that, you know, they are great, but they're not perfect, and there's a lot of imperfections in them. And they encourage, they like any game, they can be gamed. So and her talk at RSA was great, and I know that I covered it. Of course, read my article, but also go and watch the video of the talk. I believe it's up on the RSA conference site. Because she really, Katie Mussouris points out a lot of instances where your bug bounty program may be generating a lot of bugs, but they may not be the bugs that you're that you need them to generate, and it's costing you money. When you have developers who are who may even be keeping track of the bugs that they see as the development goes through, and then later on they could potentially just report those bugs because they saw them, they never got fixed in the first round of development, and now it's live. So so there's all kinds of ways that the system can be gamed, and one of the ways that is being gamed now apparently is that the lawyers are getting involved and they're putting their thumbprints on these programs. They're saying, here's, well, this is how we protect our interests. And protecting our interests involves protecting our interests and not protecting the interests of the people that are working to better our interests, which are the people who are participating. So, it's going to, the balance is going to keep, it's going to, you know, go one side to the other until there's an equilibrium.
And you just wonder too, if that sort of, if the constraints around bug bounties and these terms and conditions and the legal aspects, if that is, you know, is going to be used by vendors who want to suppress the research because they know it's going to be bad for their image, bad for the business. And Casey Ellis talked about this. He said, listen, yes, there's vulnerability shaming out there and we need to stop it, but vulnerabilities happen, and there's, you know, there's different degrees to them, obviously, but companies need to get over that, and they need to get over sort of this idea that all hackers are bad, you know, these guys with ski masks and, you know, scary faces and, you know,
hoodies.
Doing evil. He also said something interesting, and I want to quote it here. He said, here's the thing that's happening. Quote, when you think about good faith security research, if you're testing a hosted platform without authorization, it is still technically illegal. But it becomes a lot like jaywalking. Now, jaywalking doesn't have as noble a purpose as security research, but it's still similar in terms of how it's passed off, end quote. He's basically saying, even if you're sort of participating in a bug bounty program, if a company wants to turn around and say, you're hacking us, criminally hacking us, they can still do that. So this this component not only protects them, like the researchers, from not having that specter, that, you know, that fear of going into that, but I feel like it's also sort of, it's sending a message that organization is like, understands, like, that they're serious about security research and finding vulnerabilities, and they're not going to, this isn't just a token thing where they're going to wall it up with a bunch of overly cumbersome terms and conditions. They've got a purpose here, and they're trying to do right by the InfoSec community. So I think that's also a positive.
Yeah.
Maybe we should put it to the test. No.
Do you have any unreported bugs?
Oh, I'm sure we have us here, yeah. Or just me personally. I probably have a lot of bugs. Kidding. Well, I guess closing thoughts, Peter. Do you feel like prediction time? Do you feel like this is going to? So you said you already had. There's three companies that have been added to the list. Do you feel like this is? This has got potential, but this is something that is going to be a thing, whether, you know, how far, but how many, but do you feel like it's.
Well, there weren't a lot of really huge names on.
Sure, sure. But that's.
But we'll see. Yeah. I mean, the next week or so, we'll see if anybody jumps on the bandwagon. But I think at the same time, while some companies and some organizations are willing to do this for their bug bounty hunters, I think we're also going to see cases where companies are going to say, look, we're offering big bucks, we're offering 6-7 figure prizes.
Yep.
If you want to be in the running for that, you have to follow our rules. And those companies may not necessarily comply with, you know, they may not adopt any of these frameworks to protect their bug bounty hunters, or they may adopt parts of them, but we'll see. My guess is that given that there's this pushback from the bug bounty hunter protection side, we've probably already seen cases where the companies are where the bug bounty runners are trying to keep their stuff protected.
Yeah,
and I think we're probably going to see more of that in the next 12 months.
Yeah. I think there's big stuff ahead, and I think there has to be some changes to this, because you know, and Alice talked about this in the interview, you know, a few years ago, bug bounties, like Katie Massaris was saying, cool, but there weren't that many people really doing big extensive programs. Now you have DoD, major enterprises. You got Intel, for God's sakes, doing a side channel bug bounty program. Who would have ever expected that? But as you have more programs, there's more visibility. You're going to start to see more problems that are going to need to be addressed, and sort of that eroding of the good faith that KCL has talked about. So I think, yeah, the next year or so, as this stuff takes shape and as more stuff comes to the surface, probably in for some big changes here about how vulnerability disclosure is done. So lots more for us to write about, Peter, and discuss.
I love it.
Peter, thank you for joining me in this conversation.
Always glad to be here.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.